Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that wishes we could redo real life after every fail. This week, we're going to be taking a look back at how the roguelite genre has exploded, particularly on the Switch, and how the most successful titles capture the attention of so many. I'm your host and community manager for The Thirsty Mage Video Game Club, David Lloyd. And for more details on how you could be benefiting from joining said community, head on over to patreon.com/thethirstymage, or join us on the Discord server, which you can find in the show notes. Joining me on this week's discussion of roguelikes is a gentleman that rarely gets a chance to replay a game twice, NWR Reviews editor Jordan Rudick.
Maybe that's why I hate, well, not hate, but especially not after the one that I started playing today. But maybe it's why I maybe distance myself from roguelites and roguelikes, is the idea that finishing them is not really the goal of playing them, right? They're not about completion. They're about the experience and, you know, maybe finding your own way to sort of complete it or get to the end of it, whatever that might mean. But I made the mistake of playing one game we're going to talk about, a recent release that we're going to talk about extensively today. I made the mistake of starting that today, and it was basically the only thing I did. Like, I put my son down for a nap. My elder son went to he stayed at my mom's for a little while, and then I put my younger son down for a nap. He slept for 2 hours. I played this game the whole time. When he woke up, I was still playing handheld mode on Switch, and then even before we started recording, I was playing for about an hour or so. So I'm totally hooked on one particular roguelite, but I suppose there are games in this genre that find a way to scratch that itch for me. I think it's all about progression, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, well, like any good RPG player, you're all about the progression. So
I love progression mechanics in roguelites, I suppose. I mean, you don't see them as much in certain roguish or roguelite games, where it's more about kind of just starting from scratch and getting good or getting better at these games. But yeah, I like the not so hardcore roguish games, where it's more about not just your skill level increasing, but also you're choosing perks, you're choosing buffs, you're choosing benefits that you can take with you on subsequent runs. You're constantly unlocking things. I really like that. And so a bunch of the games we're going to talk about today have those kind of mechanics built in. And maybe that's why you and I both gravitate towards the list that we have here.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to getting to it. But before we do, maybe you'd like to let us know what drink you have this evening at the pub.
So the last couple of days, I've been going to Tim's to get my decaf coffee. And for whatever reason, 2 days in a row, so yesterday morning I go there, I order an extra large decaf coffee with 2 sugars. That's my standard coffee order when I go to Tim Hortons. I've been trying to lay off the Starbucks because Starbucks is expensive and we're trying to save some money right now. So I've been going to Tim's just to get my regular coffee. I've got a coconut coffee cream, soy coffee creamer at home that I use now. So that's fine. So I go and order my extra large coffee, get to the cashier to pay for it. And they tell me, we don't have enough decaf to make an extra large, but we can give you a medium. And I'm like, I don't mind waiting. Like, how long is it going to be? And they kind of hummed and hawed and said, this is all we have right now. So I just took the medium decaf. That was fine. They didn't charge me for it, so that was nice. I opened up the medium cup when I got home, and the cup was only like half full. So I guess it's nice to get free coffee, but like I left my house to get a large coffee, decaf coffee to get me through the day, or at least to complete my morning routine. So it was kind of funny that I didn't even get a third of what I'd originally set out to get. And then a funny thing, same thing happened today. Like I go out now. This was in the morning, but I was going to save some of it for later today for heat it up for the podcast. But I go there, same thing, no extra large decaf. Sorry, they asked me to if I wanted to wait 10 minutes for it, but I didn't. So I ended up just going to McDonald's and getting one. But I don't know, really, really awkward with the lack of decaf, or maybe I'm feeling a little bit disappointed in the lack of decaf in the shopping mall near me. So when I go to McDonald's, they make me wait. They make me pull over and wait for the decaf. Tim's seems to be running out. Somehow I'm being pushed back to Starbucks, which Starbucks is never out of decaf coffee. So maybe let's get my regular coffees from there. Still trying to save money, but Yeah, just I don't know. It's just been a funny couple of days with me trying to get this one order and it's just not being available. So I don't know. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's pretty crazy. It's one of those where I was looking the other day at some home appliances and finding out that there's a shortage due to COVID, and I never would have guessed that in the COVID era we'd have a shortage of decaf coffee at the local Tim Hortons.
Yeah, well, Casey would say it's poetic justice, or that I deserve it for getting decaf or something like that. But what appliance were you shopping for that was also not in stock? Or
We're trying to track down a new fridge. Ours is sounding like death. It's making some noises that make us seem like it's not long for this world. So we're trying to. Appliances are weird, though. It's like you pretty much just gotta pick one and then wait for the sale to hit because they're always like monthly sales on this stuff. So it feels like it'd be a waste of money if we just paid the regular price. So. We tracked one down, but it's just a matter of waiting to see if we, get a couple $100 off, or if it's even in stock. Because that's the other problem is we found a couple places, but they just don't have the stock. So,
Well, I gotta believe that, with Black Friday and the holiday shopping period coming up, you should get a sale on that at some point. A lot of places seem to do early Black Friday sales now too, so hopefully you won't have to wait till November to replace that.
yeah, we're really not that far away
Knowing
from it.
your climate, I suppose if your fridge just crapped out, you could probably just store all your food outside in the snow or
Yeah.
something like that, and you'd probably be okay for a little
Yeah.
while anyways.
Buy a big cooler and just plop it in the snow. Should be all right.
I don't know if it's cold enough to freeze your beer over there, but it might keep it nice and cold though.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of beer, to commemorate the roguelite topic that we have tonight, I decided I should go back to something I've done before. And last week's Scotch Ale got me hankering for this week's Scotch Ale, which is the original Wee Heavy from Gainsburg. In true roguelite fashion, it was not the exact same beer that I usually get because I happened to see that they had a different sized bottle at the IGA. So I ended up going with it's actually a little bit smaller, but it's cheaper. So usually it's like $12 for I don't know how big it's usually like a liter and a bit, a liter and a quarter or something like that. And this one it was probably like a liter, but it was $4 cheaper. And so it's one of those things where it's like the price is probably the same regardless, but in my mind it feels a little easier to spend $8 instead of 12.
Oh yeah, definitely 50% more, right? We should clarify when you the, I like the title of this actually. Wee Heavy. It's Wee Weee, as in small, and which obviously that fits being a Scotch ale. But Wee Heavy, that almost seems like an oxymoron, right? Like, because heavy is a lot, and then wee is a little bit. So I guess the implication is that it's a little bit heavy, something like that. Does it taste like it's a little bit heavy, David?
A little bit because it's got a wee heavy bit of alcohol in it at the 10.5.
It
I
does,
also
yeah.
thought it was like a bit of a joke on like the Scottish pronunciations of stuff. Like that
Yeah,
seems like
that.
something someone would say in Scotland. It's a wee heavy.
Yeah, that could be. I'm just happy to see you above 10% again. All is right with the world now.
That's right. Yep, and it tastes good going down, and have to build up that alcohol tolerance going into the winter because that's what keeps you warm.
If I go to get a coffee tomorrow and it's not it's they don't have decaf for me, I'm gonna have to buy out the whole stock of Wee Heavies at the liquor store to cope with my disappointment. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But
You could just throw some of that Scotch ale in with regular caffeinated coffee, and they'll just balance each other out.
maybe that's what I'm gonna have to do for now. I'm gonna make my own homebrew decaf here.
That's right. Well, before we get into our list of, we're actually going to be going back to each of the years on the Switch because there's been so many roguelikes or roguelites on the Switch that it's worth going kind of year by year. We're going to take a look at a couple of the best in those years. But before we do that, I think it's probably good to go through what exactly is a roguelite or a roguelike. Go through the definition of what they are and kind of try to at least talk through the differences between the two, because they're often used all the time. Like they could be swapped out. You never know which is which. So I think it'd be a good idea just to kind of try to talk about it a little bit and figure out what the actual definition is. It's not as clear cut as something like a Metroidvania. Like people typically, you say Metroidvania, you know exactly what they're talking about. But when you start confusing people with light and like, it could throw a little bit of people off. But I think the one thing that's indisputable is that the term itself came from the original Rogue, which was a game that was designed back in 1980 for Unix. And this featured a character that was trying to go get to the bottom of a dungeon to obtain the Amulet of Yendor. So along the way, the character could find weapons, armor, potions, and would try to fight off monsters and basically make it to the end, get the amulet without dying. Because with Rogue, it was a turn-based. It had permadeath. There was no boosts. Every playthrough was a brand new playthrough, even though the dungeon itself was procedurally generated. But the enemies, the benefits, everything was brand new, and there was no, you make it so far and you get to start off a little bit stronger the next time around. It was just a clean slate each run.
If you've never played Rogue before, I haven't. David, I don't think you have either.
No.
The Retronauts did a very kind of comprehensive episode on Rogue. I believe at the very least the episode seemed to focus on Rogue. It might have talked about the same kind of distinctions we're looking at today. But it's worth checking that out if you are someone interested in kind of the history of this genre and the game that started it all. I don't know that Rogue is a very easy game to go back to. I don't know that it's aged very well, but I do think it's kind of funny that over the last, maybe 5 or 10 years or so, we have seen, like you mentioned, David, like an explosion in titles that are kind of spinning off of this, I guess now 40-year-old game. It does seem like it kind of popped up out of nowhere. Like maybe if you're a larger PC gamer, or if you're someone that has always kind of like been interested in games like this, maybe you noticed more of these games or you sought them out. But at least speaking for myself, I don't know that roguelite or roguelike, anything to do with Rogue, was something I was hearing, 5 years ago. Like to me, it does seem a little bit more of a, maybe the popularity of these genres is a little bit more recent or a little bit more in the public eye now, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, like you said, I think the PC gamers were more in tune with it. Like I know there's plenty of options on Steam, like way more than on Switch, but it really has been more of a PC genre for years and years. And with the Switch, with the release of the Switch, now I think it's really caught the attention of Switch players. And in the last call, we're going to talk about why that is. And I have a couple theories, but we'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, there's always debates about what's a roguelike or roguelite. And the debate, I don't know if there's ever been a definitive answer, or, people have their own opinions. But there was one international opinion that came to a conclusion that I actually quite agree with. And so there was a conference held in Berlin, Germany, the International Roguelike Development Conference in 2008. And through discussions and this and that, they determined that they feel that there are 8 key figures that make a roguelike, so the L-I-K-E. And so I'll just go through those 8 features, because I really think they kind of hit the nail on the head here. And so the 8 features are a procedurally generated map, permadeath, turn-based, non-modal, which means all actions are available throughout the game, emergent gameplay, which means that there are multiple actions that can be chosen to accomplish any one given goal or task, resource management, combat, and exploration. So you, there has to be some form of exploration, whether it's finding new weapons, power-ups, etc. So then the question becomes, well, if that's a roguelike, then what's a roguelite? And basically, the kind of where they come to is a light is a game that isn't quite those eight features. Maybe there's certain features that are missing, or it doesn't quite get there. But it's kind of like a scale of how roguelike it is, and if it doesn't quite hit the scale, depending on your opinion, then that's when the term roguelite is used. So to me, I think I just know when I read descriptions of games and that sort of thing, they're interchangeable to me. I think if I was using the terms, I would probably keep the like term to games where there isn't progression, like after death progression. And if there was like a game where, you know, there's a bunch of games that we're going to talk about, you know, Hades, Dead Cells, where, you know, after you die, there are benefits, there are power-ups that build over time, like over runs. I think personally, I would call those roguelites because of that progression. But I don't know. Do you have a different opinion on how you would determine the difference between a like or a light?
I mean, I think that's probably the biggest one. So if we combine those two concepts, right? One is, you mentioned eight features of a roguelike, and if we maybe have only two or three or four or five of those, and then I think maybe just it, maybe for modern titles, yeah, it is about progression. It is about carryover, right? Rather than roguelike is about runs that are different or improved based on luck and based on skill, not based on repetition, right? So yep. In a roguelite, repetition leads to progression, and which unlocks things, unlocks new items, unlocks new power-ups, gives you experience points that you can spend on things. All of those are benefits you bring forward to subsequent runs. Roguelikes, with a K, those don't have, my understanding, or maybe my personal definition, is that those games wouldn't have that as much. Or maybe not at all. That you're the only things you would carry forward are knowledge of what enemies do, or the idea behind maybe what certain power-ups or what certain items are capable of. So it's knowledge, it's skill, it's just that experience that you carry forward, and a lot of your progression or a lot of your success in the game is going to be based on how much experience you have. And whether you get lucky, right? Whether you don't get trapped by the procedurally generated maps or dungeons or creatures that you have to fight. I don't know, maybe there's critical hits, maybe there's status effects, maybe certain treasures come up earlier. It's those luck-based elements that are a larger part of whether you get to the end of the run or not. Whereas in roguelite, the idea is that eventually in a roguelite, if you keep beating yourself over the head with this game, eventually you're going to beat it, right? Because you're getting more powerful every time you go through, that every time you die, you're carrying something with you to the next run. Eventually you'll be so powerful, or you'll be so capable, your character, that you're going to get through, right? So in a roguelite, eventually you will be successful, regardless of your skill level, in theory. But in a roguelike, I don't think that's true. It's built in that you have to get better at this game. You have to learn more. You have to get luckier. You just need to be more skillful with your decision making and your gameplay. I think between our two kind of interpretations here, I think we've helped at least come up with a workable definition for both games. I kind of like the term roguish. Because I think it could be a middle ground between these two. If you don't know if something's a roguelike or a roguelite, and you want to just say like it has some of these features, but you're not sure exactly what it's going to be, you could call it roguish. I don't know. It's funny. Definitions and labels are funny. Like the whole point of communicating with these genres or putting games into genres is to help people understand what to expect. Yeah. So I think as long as we, as long as the key part of this then is we understand that a roguelite is probably going to be easier and more accessible than a roguelike. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that probably everyone, everyone listening, everyone kind of in the games space can agree on, right? That if you take two games and everything's pretty much equal, the challenge is supposed to be equal, a roguelite is going to be more accessible to more players, I would say. Whereas the roguelike, it's more built for fans of the genre, maybe people who grew up with some of those PC games like the original Rogue. So, yeah, wider audience for the roguelite is another point I would settle on too.
Yeah, oh, I totally agree. I also agree with like the use of using genres, because like you said, it's, I know there's been some debate when talking about games whether we should be even categorizing them, because like so many games have such subtle nuances that you don't want to place them into certain boxes when maybe they don't quite fit. But like you said, it gives people something to compare it to, something to expect, which is kind of funny in the rogue in this discussion, because like Metroidvania is like, I know it. I've played Metroid and I played Castlevania, but having never played Rogue, it's funny to be using the term, because it's like, it's to the point where it's like, I know the type of game, but I almost feel compelled, like maybe I should just give it one whirl, just so that you know what it's like to have the genre that it's based on. But
I mean, you could go back to that game and it could turn you off of everything related to Rogue or any genre, any game that uses the letters R-O-G-U-E and any permutation or any anagram. You know what? Metroid games, like the original Metroid, is very hard to go back to. I think the Castlevania game, the original Castlevania games on NES are still quite playable. The original Metroid, maybe less so, but yeah, it's funny. Like genres are meant to be helpful. Sometimes they can be problematic as well, right? You get a lot of games nowadays, you know, with so many creative indie developers out there putting out, you know, games that are very much, you know, taking pieces of different genres and kind of maybe even creating new genres. You know, that's entirely possible and very very common now. So, I guess the maybe what we want to leave with is we don't want to be a slave to genres, right? We don't want to say that this game has to be this, and if we're going to call it a roguelite, it must do A, B, and C, and if it doesn't, we can't call it that. I think that kind of like gatekeeping is maybe not what we want to aim for, but rather just if we're trying to tell people what a game is similar to or what to expect, I think we can use these genres that people have become more familiar with, right? It maybe has Metroidvania elements. It has RPG elements. You find RPG elements everywhere nowadays. And so you can call it an RPG if it has those elements. But it might not be exclusively an RPG. It might also be a visual novel. It might also be a roguelike. It might be a platformer as well. Like what was that game we played and we reviewed, David, with the character with the mask? It was very colorful. That had platforming and RPG. Had a turn-based combat system, if you remember.
Underhero?
Did it have the word Underhero? Yeah, exactly. So that was a game that was very much outside of different genres. It's not an RPG. It's not just a platformer. It's not just an action game. It had so many different smaller pieces to it that made it really unique. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more and more games like that kind of exist in the marginal spaces between genres, and that's fine. But tonight, obviously, we're talking about two very fluid genres themselves. But also ones that I think people are just they're coming around to, right? People are coming around to understanding what a roguelite and a roguelike are and whether they like those types of games or not. And as it turns out, some of the games we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes, people seem to really, really like. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we can get right into it. Maybe we'll start with the newest ones and then kind of head back to the beginning of the Switch's launch release. Sure. So the one that you had alluded to in the intro that you played today that I've been playing the last couple weeks, and we actually have a review for on both YouTube and our The Thirsty Mage channel by Ben. A terrific review. If you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend either reading or watching because it's terrific. But this is for the Supergiant Games developed Hades. So this was a game that did start on PC. I believe it was in like early access for up until recently, I believe, until the shadow dropped there on the Switch and a few weeks ago. But yeah, this is a roguelite, I guess, because it does do the progression. Like, you very much are expected to die and expected to die often. An isometric style action game that is very much in the Supergiant Games wheelhouse. Like, if you've played Bastion or Transistor, it very much feels like a Supergiant game. But it really does have that roguelike feel to it. It doesn't have, even with it being like multiple runs and multiple deaths and that sort of thing, what I find amazing that they were able to do is it was to still put in their signature kind of linear story and voice acting and to give it like this atmosphere that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's got the same art style, reminiscent of Transistor, especially. The combat, the satisfying nature of the combat and the sound effects and all that, like, yeah, a staple of the games they've made. I haven't played Pyre yet, but definitely Bastion and Transistor, you know, you get a lot of the same feels for the combat in those games as you do in this one. It's super fast-paced. Like, it's incredibly hard to put down. Like, I now understand why after this game launched on Switch and I guess left early access that everyone has been talking about it, everyone has been playing it. Joe at NWR gave it a 10. I'm not surprised. I think this is going to be a lot of people's game of the year, and it's certainly going to be a huge part of the game of the year discussions with everybody. So yeah, if you haven't checked out Hades, definitely look into it. Check out some reviews like the one we've got on the Thirsty Mage. But yeah, do yourself a favor. If you enjoy any of Supergiant Games' previous titles or any kind of roguelites at all, like I'm sure you would easily get into this one. It's accessible. The progression is awesome. The combat is super satisfying. Like I said, I'm kind of ignoring the story a little bit. I'm just kind of enjoying the gameplay and trying out different buffs and perks and abilities you can get. You can unlock different weapons with keys that you pick up. I was saying to you, David, before we started recording it, I'm really enjoying this this shield weapon that you kind of throw like Captain America, and it bounces from target to target and then returns to you. But you can also block with it, or you can just smash people in the face with it, or charge it up and do a tackle or a dash attack with it. Your character has a dashing move they can use to avoid enemies and avoid projectiles. You have, in addition to a basic attack, you've also got kind of a projectile thing that you can upgrade as well. Like, they call it, is it called a cast or something like that? It's got a funny name, but with the A button, you can do that on Switch. And so you can upgrade that one. I was lobbing like these grenades that were kind of like poison potions. They would create a mist that was stunning people, but you can also upgrade. Yeah, so you can upgrade those, make them more potent. You run into different gods that grant you different benefits to your basic attack or your special attacks, your dash, things like that. And then just other perks you can get, like increased damage, increased speed. You're earning money, you're earning currency to spend outside of a run after you die. You can improve your stats or improve your abilities for subsequent runs. Man, it's an awesome game. Like, I can't believe how good it is, actually. Like, I know everybody was saying it. I'm like, oh, but I don't necessarily love games like this. But man, this is right up there. I definitely see why it's gotten so much hype around it.
Yeah, and this one on our scale of like to light, this is definitely closer to light because there's many of the key features are actually missing, like the map, although random, I wouldn't call it procedurally generated because the rooms themselves, like, the way that that it works is like you enter a room and you clear the enemies, and then sometime often there's a choice between two paths depending on which benefit you want to get. Like the once you've cleared a room, there'll be two paths and it'll show you what you will get depending on which room you go into, and then you just kind of go to the next room, kill everyone there, and keep on moving. So there's randomness to what rooms are next, but the rooms themselves are you'll see the same room very often, like each of the different levels. So there's like a Tartarus, and then I'm blanking on the name of the next one. Asphodel. I think it's Asphodel, and then there's Elysium. So like there's themes to the world, and then there'll be like, I don't know, 10 rooms that just kind of randomly, but the rooms themselves don't change. They're very much set. Mm-hmm. The enemies are different, but the rooms themselves are set. So yeah, there's really no procedural generation of the map per se. No exploration, like you're just going from room to room. Definitely combat, definitely resource management, because what you have to decide on the what equipment and what boons from the gods that you'll use.
And how to spend your money, or you can actually pick up items that it's like, I guess it's like nectar of the gods or something, and you can offer it to the gods in exchange for their favor, or for maybe they might throw you an extra item or something like that. So yeah, there's a lot of items to pick up and to keep track of, and things that you can spend to acquire different things. It seems like there's a lot going on, but it's very, you pick it up very easily. Like there's not a lot of necessity for any kind of tutorial, I don't think. Everything seems to come quite naturally.
Yeah, I agree. And definitely no permadeath, because every time you die, you walk from the bloodbath into Hades lobby there. So, and then as you come back, you go back to his bedroom, and you can add permanent benefits that make you stronger as you go along. So it's a terrific game. Definitely a fun one, high on my list of Switch roguelites, if that's the types of game you enjoy.
I mean, I can't imagine that I won't be including this in my top five games of the year. I've been playing it for like three or four. I've played it for one day for like 3 or 4 hours, and I I'm thinking about it right now. I'm thinking, as soon as we stop recording, I want to go and play this game. I'm going to say, David, I got to go. I have to play more Hades. I got to, I think, what might be one of the final bosses, if not the final boss, on a run earlier today, and I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm like even more motivated to beat the game. And but even then, like after you beat it, like there's so much more to unlock and to do. There's different kind of objectives to achieve that I think unlock or grant you extra items or extra points to spend on different things. So yeah, Hades is really, really good. I'm sure this isn't going to be the last time we talk about this game. Obviously, we'll do a kind of a year-end wrap-up, and Hades will probably be a big part of that too. But we do have other games to get to, obviously, so we don't want to take away too much of the spotlight from them as well.
No, and there's, so for 2020, there's, I would say there's a couple honorable mentions. I'll just quickly mention a recent game I played from NIS America, which is Void Terrarium. This is a more traditional rogue, very closer to the roguelite style, where you're dropped into, you're this little robot living in this post-apocalyptic world, where you find a human that's dying, and you want to help keep them alive. So you're venture out into the wastelands of where the enemies are to collect different supplies to come and kind of help nurse the human back to health. And of those key features, it really has a lot. Like it has a procedurally generated map, definitely changes every time you go in. It is turn-based in the sense that nothing, like you choose, like each movement, once you stop, the game stops around you, so you can take a moment and look around and kind of decide what your movements, what your actions are going to be. It has that different actions for different areas. The multiple ways of going through the dungeons are available. Definitely has the resource management, because you do pick up benefits, and there's only so many slots you could choose, and there's only so many slots of resources that you can take back with you back to the human. And definitely has combat and exploration. So it's very closer, very much closer to a roguelike, which also makes sense because it also feels like an older game. Just with the graphics and kind of the simplistic way of playing. But another great option for that style of game in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't played Void Terrarium, but a game I did play recently, reviewed it for NWR about a month ago, Going Under, which is kind of a double entendre, I suppose, because it's a company that they make soft drinks. Their name is Fizzle, and you play as this intern. I don't quite remember her name, but she's kind of starting out. She's looking for a job in marketing, and she gets hired. And when she meets the boss of the company, he says, "Oh yeah, we need to clear out the dungeons for underneath the company or underneath the building. Clear out the dungeons of monsters for us." So she's quickly taken aback, but it kind of sets off or starts off with the humor that kind of permeates the game. So you go through these different dungeons. You can kind of pick up almost any object in the room, which is pretty cool. Brooms, fire extinguishers, knives, balls, all those different things. Anything that's not nailed down, I suppose. Staplers, and you can shoot giant staples at enemies. You go through about a series of 8 to 9 rooms before you get to a boss. The enemies do a lot of damage, and there's not a ton of carryover. This is almost closer to a roguelike, I suppose. The two things that do carry over from run to run is your coworkers can become mentors for you, the intern. They can grant buffs depending on which one you select. For example, I think one of the guys who works at the cafeteria, if you make him your mentor, then he will show up in the in-dungeon shop and give you a free item. So there is currency you can spend that you earn by defeating enemies, and once in a while you'll run into a shop where you can spend it to maybe increase your health. There's a lot of different perks you can pick up, like maybe one where if you get hit, you'll electrify enemies and stun them. One that makes your weapons really big when you pick them up. There's also a special room you go into where you have to accept a curse that lasts for about 3 rooms. And if you take the curse, then you get to pick up like 2 or 3 different items to take with you. It's really fun. It's really difficult early on. It is a game where you want to get more skillful and kind of learn, maybe learn, when to be patient, when to be aggressive with certain enemies. The bosses are fun. It is very colorful as well. Very vibrant. I had a lot of fun with it. It was a game I didn't expect to like necessarily because of, there's not as much progression with this one, but I found myself getting good at it fairly early on, and that kind of propelled me through. Once you think you beat the game once you beat Going Under the first time, or at least it feels like it, there's a kind of a second world that opens up that is very, very challenging, and it kind of fits with the story and everything that's going on, but definitely for a game that's much more challenging than something like Hades, and much less about the progression, just about a little bit more of your skill and experience. Going Under is pretty good. It's published by Team 17. They've done games like Moving Out. I'm trying to think what else they published. They published Death Squared as well, I think, another a different puzzle game.
Prison Break game good. Too that I reviewed. I can't think of its name now.
The Escapists?
Yes, that's it. The Escapists.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they might have done Overcooked as well, so they're familiar with those kind of games. You've probably seen Team 17's either development work or publishing work a mm-hmm. bunch, but yeah, Going Under is very charming. It's very funny. It's got a very kind of slapstick humor style to it. There is one other perk that you can carry with you. Once you've used a certain perk enough times in the dungeon, you add it kind of to a roster of perks that you can choose to bring with you on subsequent runs. So if one is that maybe every so often enemies will drop health, normally they don't. If you bring that perk with you into the dungeon, that's the one thing you can have with you, and you'll start off every run with that one. So there's some progression, there is things to unlock, but it is a little bit more challenging of a game. But definitely want to check out again if you're a fan of games like this, or even if you're not and you're just looking for maybe games to get into. This is a pretty fun one just because of the style and presentation.
Yeah, and it seems like that's the one commonality between all of the games that we're going to talk about is the ability to get into the game right away, like to really maybe not master it right away, but to understand enough very quickly. So that it kind of sucks you in right away. I think that seems to be one of the factors that kind of can dictate whether these types of games either succeed or fail, is that ability to be to get you, because you really need to get people like very quick, like few minutes, like just get in, start fighting, get it right away, and then build off of that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to feel like you can be successful in a game, or that there is a kind of light at the end of the tunnel. If you play it and you just, you know, you fail, and there's nothing coming of that. There's no, you don't feel like you're getting better. You don't feel like you're learning more. Then you're probably going to bounce off the game pretty fast, and maybe bounce off similar games pretty fast. So I do think Going Under is a game that you might be frustrated very, very early on, but after you do a few runs, you do start to learn the things you need to do to get to the end, to beat the boss, and you know what a good run looks like, and what items maybe suit your play style and things like that. So, it is a little bit more accessible, I would say, but it does have the challenge in the back half of the game.
Yeah, and so looking back at 2019, we each have a game that stands out for us. The one for me is a little off though, or a little weird in the sense that it's. It's not a combat game per se. This is Slay the Spire. It's a trading card style game, but this was a really runaway hit for me. Like it sucked me in right away. I'm kind of a sucker for trading card games to start with, so I really got into it quickly. And the way that it's set up is there's like multiple endings. So when you think you've beaten the game, you realize that you've just unlocked the path to a new era, like a second world. It was one of these games that just it kept me coming back to the point where I ended up having to get the best ending. Like a lot of times, like these types of games, you play through them a few times and you get to the end, and you know, with the amount of games that we play, there's not always a lot of time to replay multiple times to get like the endings for all the characters so you can see the final ending. But this one I definitely had to, because there's three different characters, each with their own style of fighting. So there's like a warrior character, kind of a mage-ish, they use potions. It was more of like a poison way of killing. And then there's like this robot with this really weird, orb attacks. So each one felt different, and it very much had a building up of, you know, you'd go on runs and you go through and you would collect new cards on each run that could be used in subsequent runs. So you really were building up your character as you progressed. Definitely resource management, because you would be presented with three cards after winning a fight, and you would have to choose only one of those cards. And the paths, like you would know the paths up front of where you were going, and because there's very limited ways to heal your character, you'd have to kind of make concessions on, okay, like how many people do I want to fight? Will I have enough HP by the time I get to the boss of the world? The trading card aspect of it, I think, was more visual than because it was very much like a turn-based combat system. Like they could have done it in a way where it was just menu-based. Like I think the cards were more of a presentation to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But definitely a game that really sucked me in 2019, and I put a lot of hours into that game.
Yeah, my brother was raving about that game kind of around the same time you were, Dave, and he still encourages me to play it, and I would like to at some point. The game that I found notable as a roguelite in 2019 was Children of Morta, and I talked about the game on the podcast a fair bit, so you can go back and listen to one of those previous episodes. I'm sure we talked about Slay the Spire as well, but at least a focus on what makes it a roguelite title. You again, you're dungeon crawling. It's kind of an action RPG combat style. It does have a little bit of a feeling like something like Diablo, but not as maybe the environments aren't nearly as large. It's got a little bit more of a story to it and kind of heartfelt characters and emotional kind of narrative beats to it. But what makes it roguelite is the idea that every time you go through the dungeon, it is going to look different. The enemies aren't always going to be in the same places, even if you will find the same types of enemies. But you can collect gold that you can spend when you get back to the family house, the Bergsons, I think they're called. When you get back to their house, there's different shops where you can spend the currency you pick up in the dungeon. You can improve the damage you do. I think you can improve your defense or your speed. You can unlock different ruins that will pop up in the dungeon as well that will grant you different perks. So it maybe this one was a little bit skewed towards you do have to one has a good balance between that idea of getting better at the game with every run, but also there are things you can unlock through gameplay that will make runs easier. I found this one really satisfying. It ended up getting a bunch of DLC as well. I think there might be a bit of story DLC, paid story DLC that's coming soon or released recently, but I know it did have some free updates as well. So Children of Morta, you know, one of my favorite games from last year, definitely check it out. Just know that the way it does roguelite is a little bit more difficult, a little bit kind of, again, in between those two distinctions, like and light. Just in the fact that it's the type of progression you're bringing with you is probably not, it's not going to be enough to save you. But there are different characters. One of the cool things is that perks unlocked for one character will unlock perks for other characters as well. So there's kind of that family dynamic of if the father gets better at one thing, his children also get better at it. So I really like that aspect of it as well. So there are some unlockables that make it kind of roguelite, but there's also a lot of challenge, and you can't necessarily rely on the progression to get you through. You do have to eventually raise your skill level so you can get through the harder dungeons.
Yeah, that's a game that I really been meaning to play as well. It's funny that in 2019 we each played one that the other didn't.
That's gonna keep happening. as more and more games come out, and we have obviously different schedules and different things to review and take care of. But that's the beauty of a podcast like this, is where we can share our experience about different games, and even if we want to get to those ones at some point, whether that happens or not, at least we can speak to the games a little bit and know how enjoyable they are.
Yeah, and up next is 2018 with arguably the saw the release of the current most popular roguelite. I think potentially is Dead Cells. I think. It hit the Switch. I mean, it had some notable marketing or it was in the headlines for reasons beyond it being good. That kind of got it some notoriety. But the fact that it was a fantastic game on top of that really, really helped as well. And this is... It's funny. I see so many similarities between Hades and Dead Cells. In the sense of like having different weapons to choose and the way that you build up the character and selecting perks at the beginning of the runs and that sort of thing. With the one exception being that Dead Cells is very much a 2D side scroller, up, down, left, right, as opposed to the isometric Hades.
Yeah, so the perspective is a major difference, obviously. I think in Dead Cells, I haven't played it yet, actually. I really should, of course. But my understanding is that you kind of unlock shortcuts in the game, or that you can change the environment. Like maybe you get a key that unlocks a door, and the next time you do a run, that door will be open. Is that, David, is that right?
Yeah, so there's abilities that you collect that will then give you access to different paths. Like when you first start up Dead Cells, you'll go through the first dungeon, and there's only one way to exit, because you can't, the jump to the other path is not available. Like I believe it's like too high to jump. So there's like I think it's some kind of grappling hook or something, but I can't remember exactly, but there's an ability that provides you access to the door that would take you through another path. So it's different paths that become unlocked when you get the abilities.
Right, but it's not like a character progression per se. It's not your character getting better or stronger or more capable. Like it is more like environmental progression or maybe exploration progression. Like the map does open up as you play more. At least to this point, I don't think Hades has something like that. Maybe that's one of the things that makes Dead Cells so unique as a roguelite, is the fact that it's not just your character improving or the idea that you need to get better and better, but you're also just unlocking new ways to go through it or different places to go. Like, it kind of reminds me of Dark Souls or even Bloodborne. Bloodborne is a game for PlayStation 4 we're going to cover at the end of the month. Really looking forward to that. I've been playing it recently. Bloodborne is a lot of the exploration in Bloodborne is about going back to where you were and unlocking gates, dropping ladders, unlocking paths to make subsequent runs through areas more easier to do, or to make areas more accessible. So that's a huge part of that game. There's that kind of environmental progression that happens by opening up shortcuts. It sounds like Dead Cells does something similar, and that's a unique form of progression, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember at the time just feeling like Dead Cells successfully was able to take a lot of elements from a lot of genres and kind of apply them to that roguelite formula, and it just worked. Like, it was easy to pick up, it was easy to figure out, the action was fast, exciting, and they just made it work. It was a great time. It still is, and I know there's been DLC, but I haven't been able to touch any of the DLC. It's just a game, like you said, it's tough in the review business to go back to games from years ago, but mm-hmm. If I ever was going to, it is intriguing to see. I'd like to see how it's changed since that original release.
Yeah, well, one day when all these companies, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, go out of business and we're just playing our backlogs or playing, remasters or re-releases or something like that, we can go back to some of these games and check out the DLC. Like, it is nice to see these successful games, blockbuster titles, I would say, almost. Dead Cells especially, like, they add to it, they make it better, they give out additional content. I know they re-released the physical version with that added content bundled in, which was a cool thing as well. But I'd love to get to it at some point. We'll see if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
The other game in 2018, I don't know if I played this on Switch. I might have even reviewed it on Switch, but I certainly played it on PC, and that's Darkest Dungeon. So Darkest Dungeon is, it's very much not action-y. It's definitely turn-based, probably closer to roguelike, actually, because there isn't a ton of progression that you make. Like, once characters die, I don't think they come back. Like, you need to re-recruit party members. So you can get different classes of characters, maybe an alchemist, a rogue, a knight, and they all have different different attacks and different stats that they bring to the party. And they are arranged kind of on a 2D screen. They're arranged in a group of four, and based on their position in the group, like, you would want to put the knight as your tank. You'd put him in the front, and his abilities are probably only going to affect the first or second row of the enemy squad, which is also can be a group of four. So based on where your character is in the lineup, they're going to have access to different abilities. And so part of the strategy or the tactics in the game is altering your enemy's layout, bringing maybe their weaker healers to the front of the pack so you can attack them, but also avoiding your weaker characters being drawn to the front. Like, if you've got a spellcaster or a bishop or maybe a paladin or something, and they're not as strong in terms of constitution, if they're brought to the forefront of the battle, they're going to take a lot of damage and they might die. Darkest Dungeon is probably the hardest game of all the ones we've talked about so far. Not only do you have to worry about your health meters entering combat, but you also have to worry about your sanity meter. So depending on events that happen through each run, if you maybe run out of food, or if it's getting too dark, or if your characters take critical hits, I think their sanity meter starts to fill up, and they can actually go crazy. And then they're basically incapacitated that way. They become very useless. You can't really maybe necessarily tell them what to do. And so after you leave a dungeon with the spoil, maybe the spoils that you do have, you actually have to pay money to bring their sanity meter back to normal. And so they might have to rest. Maybe they have to go to the church and pray, or I think they can go to like a brothel or something and seek some kind of restitution there. But yeah, Darkest Dungeon, really, really tough. Definitely not for the faint of heart. It can take a lot of runs to make any real progress. But yeah, it's been a long time since I've played it. I think it's very well made, but it's punishing for sure.
Yeah, 2018 is another year where I played one and you played the other.
Yeah.
Another game I remember when it came out, hearing good things and meant to pick it up and just never got around to it. But it's on my backlog of things I want to play. But
I imagine it's a game, if you don't mind playing on PC, it's probably a game you could get cheap at some point. But it is excellent. Wherever you end up playing it, it is definitely worth a look. Almost just because you want to see like how, we've talked about lots of roguelites that might have, or roguelikes that might have action elements to them, but this one certainly doesn't have any of that. It's all about, you know, making good decisions and knowing when to push the tempo or to not take a risk and maybe to leave a dungeon early. You also have to, this resource management is probably the biggest concern here. I hadn't even really talked about, like, you need to bring, you know, things that you can make torches to, so you have enough light, or, you know, medical supplies so you can heal yourselves and things like that, heal status effects. So, yeah, a lot of things to juggle for sure, but a worthwhile experience nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think we're supposed to be seeing Darkest Dungeon 2 in 2021, I think.
I'd forgotten about that, but I think that's right. And so that'll be a fun one to see what they do differently with the sequel.
Mm-hmm. And finally, we're into the Switch's launch year, 2017, and this is really where I come to appreciate the genre, because early on there wasn't a whole lot of Switch games, and so if you started getting into the indie stuff, like the indie games that I was enjoying were the roguelikes, and or roguelites, depending on which ones, but. Two that stood out for me in 2017. One is Nier Avoider from Flying Oak Games. So this one is an isometric shoot 'em up. So you're starting the game off as this little robot head, and you have a body, legs, and a gun on each arm, and you're going through. So you choose. There's, I think, about five or six different maps, I think it is. And so it'll tell you how many enemies are in the map. So the whole point of it is you just go in and clear the map and move on to the next one. And you just take the spoils of war. So you pick up the weapons, the armor. So it's the weapons, the legs, and the body. So you'll just be picking up different types of them throughout the level, and once you've cleared the map, you kind of go back to your home base, and you go through all of the loot that you've collected. You sell anything that your robot can't use, because there's like three styles of robot, basically like a tank, a speeder, a speed one, and then I can't remember the third one. But if your robot can't use them, you just sell them for money, that so that you can buy other things. But you could also just if retrofit your robot with different weapon types. And it really is just like a blow stuff up. that's the whole point of the game. Just get the biggest, baddest weapons and blow everything up on screen. There's nukes, there's flamethrowers, there's lasers. It's a terrific game.
And sounds like a David title to me.
Yeah, just, there's
just blow up everything. Yeah. Leave nothing standing.
Yeah, exactly. Heavy emphasis on blowing stuff up, and yeah, it's really fun. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I haven't played this one, but I'm a little disappointed that you don't have a third game with the word void in it. You've got Void, Terrarium, Neurovoider, but the last one is not as such a game. But maybe 2021 will bring a new Void game for you.
Yeah, maybe. Another game that I enjoyed in 2017, though, was Ironcast. And I'm still proud of as far as I know, I have the speed run of that game record. There was no record on the speed run website, so it's me putting it on there and having not been beaten yet. And I still have my YouTube video of it. But Terrific game. It's you're playing in kind of like an alternate European setting where like France and England are at war, using these like steampunk mechs, I guess would be the best way to describe it. And sort of the same thing where there's like a path, you choose paths to go. It's like your mech versus the other mech, turn-based. But it's on top of it being turn-based, it's also the match three puzzle games. So there'll be like the puzzle games kind of in the middle, and what you're doing is you're trying to connect different types of, it's like the, whether it's ammo or like energy, you, by matching them in the puzzle, you're adding them to your inventory. And so that's how like you're able to shoot, or how you protect yourself, or how you build up shields. And yeah, you're just fighting a mech on until you get to the very end. And then there's the big bad mech at the end that you have to defeat. So it's, I mean, the runs themselves, like the game isn't overly long, like going from beginning to end, you could do it in like 2 hours or less. I think I was like at 145 was my speed run, but, fantastic game that I enjoyed back, when there was not a whole lot of games on my Switch.
I haven't played Ironcast, but just kind of looking back at all the titles we've mentioned this evening, like it really feels like there's so much wiggle room within the roguish games that, you know, you can probably find something you're going to enjoy, right? From something that's brutal, brutally difficult, like Darkest Dungeon, to something that's much more accessible, like Hades, or even Dead Cells, I think. Like, so many, when I see so many people talking about these games that I know maybe it's not the type of game they love, it's not their favorite genre, it's not something they gravitate towards, but they're really, really into it. Like, even a game like Hades like that is definitely for me. I think that that's kind of what's maybe beautiful, or maybe that's what's making these games so popular, why everybody's talking about roguelite and roguelike in 2020 is because, and maybe why so many developers are kind of leaning into those genres, is because they can really experiment within them and do new things with those kind of parameters that people have started to become more familiar with. So, I'm looking forward now to seeing what creative people are going to be bringing out in even the rest of this year, and certainly the years to come, on the new platforms. You know, like, what, how are they going to utilize the technology, the faster loading times, the graphics, to give us new experiences within these genres.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going.
Yeah, it's definitely become a staple on Switch, which is the topic of the last call for this evening. So the question, I guess, that to pose is, you know, what has made the Switch the console hub for the roguelike genre? Because like we said, it very much has been a PC thing. Like, PC gamers have been playing these for years. I don't feel like these have ever really hit the console space. Like, there obviously has been roguelites. Like, I'm not going to say there hasn't been any popular ones in the past, but to me, it's very much been an indie wave of roguelite on Switch that Nintendo owners have in the past have always kind of been, maybe guilty of kind of focusing on just the Nintendo games. But it seems like on Switch, for indie games, the indie games that are standing out are really in the roguelite genre to me. So I guess, and when you talk to some of the indie developers, most of them will tell you that when they launch concurrently on Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox, like the indie roguelites, usually what ends up happening is that you find out that the Switch version sold the most. Like, that's typically what happens in these cases. So I guess the question is do you have a theory as to why the Switch seems to be the place where indie roguelites seem to be having the most success?
Yeah, so I'll suggest two. The first one is that PC, it's possible that PC gamers who traditionally maybe were the greater population or player base for roguelite and roguelike games would buy the Switch as their second place to play games. So if you're primarily a PC gamer and you're like, okay, I can get a PS4, I can get an Xbox, or I can get a Switch, you're probably going to lean towards Nintendo for the exclusives, for the indies, and just for the form factor, right? You could get a PlayStation 4 for the exclusives, sure, but if you've already spent a lot of money on a gaming PC, you might not see the value proposition there. You're probably not going to get an Xbox if you're already a PC gamer, because almost everything you can play on an Xbox, you can probably play on a PC, especially now. So it might be that players that would have gravitated towards these types of games were looking for their first console, or looking to pick up a gaming console that would be the place they'd play some of these smaller games. So that's one theory. I'm not sure. You know, I'm sure there is data out there that suggests, like, you know, what percentage of PC players also own a Switch, or what consoles do they own? I'm sure, but I'm not aware. I don't know those numbers offhand or details offhand. But the second thing, and this is something I maybe, you know, speak to certainly from personal experience, and that's that, yeah, this is a handheld device that can be very easily put into sleep mode, started and stopped, pick up and play whenever you want. And a lot of these rogue-ish games, whatever type they are, they're built on the idea of one more run, or just trying to complete a single run, one run at a time. So the Switch seems to be very well suited to that. If I just want to play for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and just see how far I can get in one run, I don't want to boot up my TV console, maybe kick off the kids who are playing it right now, get all set up, grab my controller, my TV remote. I have to do all these things to get set up for that maybe 10 or 15 minutes to play a game. But if it's on Switch, I pick up my console, I take it out of the dock, whatever. I hit the home menu button, and within seconds I'm back to playing a run of Hades or a run of Going Under. Like the form factor and the portability and the sleep mode, all those different features of the Switch lend themselves very, very well to roguelite and roguelite games. They really lend themselves to games where the whole idea is to play for a short time, and you can play more if you want to, but you will have a fulfilling, satisfying experience within 5 to 20 minutes. The Switch is a master of offering that, or making that experience very comfortable. So I think it's probably one of those two, or maybe a combination of them. What do you think, David? Why so many roguelites on Switch?
Yeah, I definitely agree with the handheld device. Like the speed of being able to go in and out, or to, you know, play a run while you're watching something else, or you know, right before bed or something like that. It's definitely way more convenient to do it on a Switch, to have it like right there in front of you. So definitely that I would say that's a factor. One other theory that I wonder about is if the Nintendo community, based on our history of the games that we play, if there's some familiarity with that comes with that genre. I would never even consider like Mario, 2D Mario. Like it's not a roguelike in any sense of the term. Mm-hmm. But when you consider the style, you're kind of preconditioned to that style a bit. Like, yes, you know, you play Mario and everything is handcrafted, platforming and that sort of thing. But there's a familiarity there when you go from playing like maybe even a Super Metroid, you play Super Metroid a bit and then you play Dead Cells. It's like a second nature, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. You know, the PlayStation and Xbox to me have really become more where the big budget 3D huge games are played. Like, you know, I'll play my Final Fantasies and Nier Automata and, I don't know, the Red Dead Redemptions or the sports games. Like, they're all like the big bombastic 3D huge games. And I think the Nintendo community is kind of used, to playing those 2D smaller titles, the kind of the way they're crafted. So I think there might just be a familiarity there where the roguelite genre has some similarities to other genres that have thrived on Nintendo. Like, mm-hmm. You have so many Mario fans or Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. Those types of games have just kind of given people kind of, an extra step or a head start in the roguelite genre that, they're the types of games that people have enjoyed playing for years. So it's kind of a natural progression into that.
Yeah, I think that one other thing to add to that, and I totally agree. I think that Nintendo has, or maybe these developers have, reached out to Nintendo, but you've seen these games in Nintendo Direct presentations, right? Like, Nintendo has been responsible for marketing a bunch of, high profile or games, rogue games that would go on to be very successful on the console. And so it's a concerted effort, not just by people making the games, but also Nintendo and other publishers to market games like this for people on the Switch. So obviously a lot of factors going into it, but I don't see this stopping anytime soon. I think people are still going to want to play their roguelite and roguelite games on Switch. I imagine that most people playing Hades right now, they're probably playing it on Switch. Like, I'll be really interested to see the sales figures, but Hades was part of a Nintendo Direct. It shadow dropped. just so many people on Twitter I saw playing it that very same day and in the weeks after that. I'm going to be really happy to see how well that game does, and hopefully it bodes well for them bringing Pyre over to Switch as well, which is I guess the third game just before Hades.
Yeah, I'm curious about the Pyre. Like, I figured one of Hades or Pyre would come, but yeah, I kind of assumed Pyre would be what's next, just because naturally, being the third game, I figured that would be next. But like I said, Hades has been on Steam for a bit, so maybe just the reception they were getting on Steam, maybe they just prioritize Hades over it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the beauty of something like Steam and Early Access, is that they can get a feeling for what game people would gravitate towards, which one would be more successful, or which one would be more worthwhile porting to a console. And I think we know that Supergiant Games doesn't outsource their porting work. They do the ports for consoles and wherever they end up bringing their games. I think all of that is done in-house. So they're very methodical and thoughtful about where they put their games, and I obviously appreciate them for that. But we, more of their games being on Switch would obviously be great, and other places to play as well. So we'll see what happens with Pyre, and we'll see what's next. Maybe there'll be DLC for Hades. I don't know. But man, yeah, I thought, we got to wrap this up, because I got to get back to playing Hades.
That's right. Yeah, well, The roguelite genre is not going anywhere, and sure as the years go by, we're going to see some even better ones. So looking forward to seeing what comes next for this genre, and I'm sure both of us will be playing many more to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now I have Darkest Dungeon 2 to look forward to, now that you've mentioned that, because I had forgotten about that.
That's right.
That'll be a good one. So I think that'll do it for this episode on roguelites, games like Hades, Going Under, Dead Cells. Lots of good ones we talked about today. If you have not already, we'd love to have you subscribe to the podcast on your podcast app of choice. You can leave us a review, helps with visibility, gets more people listening. Obviously, we're trying to build a community, not just through the podcast, but also through the Patreon. David, details of the Patreon, or are we just directing people to the website now?
Well, I'll go through it quickly one more time. We've had it for a couple weeks now, and I really recommend that if you have any interest in playing some new games, come to the Patreon, check out the details, hit us up on Discord. We've had about a month in the Discord now, so the folks that are in the Patreon will be able to provide some testimonials on their experience so far. The longer as we go, the experience will be easier to describe, so people will help out. But The way that it works is there's three tiers. The first tier is $2 a month, and that gets you access to a private Discord channel. Like, we have a public Discord channel for everybody, but we have a private room for the Patreons. There we talk about the different topics that we'll be discussing. We'll also have games that we'll be playing together and that sort of thing. So your $2 a month, not only does it go towards keeping the lights on, but it also gives you a voice and the types of things that gets covered on the Mage. And then the next two tiers above that are the Black Mage and White Mage classes. They are $10 and $5 respectively. And in the $5 tier, you get the same benefits as the first, the Warrior class, but then you also get access to different games. So it could be codes where you get to play a game for free and review it and let us all know what you think of it. Or it could be games that we get to give away to our Patreon, or they're games that retro games that we own the physical copy of, and since we've played it and we want to pass on the experience to others, we'll maybe mail you one of those games. They come around now and then, and we're looking to help people play games maybe they can't find access to. And the $10 a month one gets all of those things, plus we also you get a producer credit on our content. So there have been a few videos so far where we've got the name on there. So if you think it'd be kind of neat to be a producer, then maybe the Black Mage class is for you. But yeah, I really recommend maybe even as a starting off is just joining us on our Discord, talking with a lot of RPG fans there, and you can share experiences and they can let you know what it's like.
Yeah, sounds good. I can finally say, I'm looking at our podcast schedule, and I think we've kind of, every time I announce, you know, the upcoming episodes, sure enough, you know, something falls through or we have to move things around, but I think I can say with some certainty what the next 3 weeks are going to look like. So next week, our plan is to have our Crystallis episode with the Talk Nintendo podcast. So another crossover with Perry and Casey. That'll be next week. Crystallis is an NES game. It's available on Nintendo Switch Online. So if you're an online subscriber to Nintendo Switch, you get that for free. It's also part of the SNK collection, which is where I was playing it. It's got a nice rewind and playthrough feature. You can actually just watch the game and jump in at any point. So that's kind of cool. After that, we are going to talk about Ys Origin, an action RPG that just recently came to Switch. Might have come to, I think it came to other platforms earlier, so you can also play it on PC, PS4, and Xbox, I believe. And then we're going to end October with a fittingly spooky game, and that's Bloodborne, which I had mentioned playing a few minutes ago. That's going to be a crossover with the Cross Players, formerly the Switch Island. So we've had Ben from the Switch Island. He joined us for our episode on Bastion. So he and another fellow from the Cross Players are going to join us for a Bloodborne crossover podcast. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm most of the way through my recent playthrough of Bloodborne. David, are you into it yet? Where were you about in Bloodborne?
I think I played about an hour or so. I haven't gotten too far. I got my butt whooped, not too far in by some big, huge knight. So, my plan is to go back and avenge my death.
Yeah. You're going to be, well, get used to that. Ben actually reached out to me on Twitter and he's like, so Bloodborne's pretty hard, eh? And I'm like, yeah, you haven't seen anything yet. He got stuck on one of the early bosses, and I told him, the boss you're fighting right now is optional. The boss you actually have to beat to advance is even harder than that. So if you're stuck on him, you might need to, I don't know, maybe grind for some souls or not souls. They're called blood echoes in this game, but maybe grind out a few levels or find some crafting equipment to improve your primary weapon. But yeah, so we've got kind of a more or less set in stone schedule for the rest of October. Really looking forward to these episodes. And if you want to join us to play Crystallis or Ys Origin or Bloodborne, you know, we'd love to hear from you. You can email david@thethirstymage.com. You can reach out to either of us on Twitter. I'm @riskman64. David is @filteredgamer. Or yeah, like David was saying, join us on Discord. You know, we've got a general chat there where you can be happy to chat with you about any of these upcoming episodes. David, anything else?
I think that about covers it.
Cool. So yeah, thanks again for joining us on an episode about roguelites, especially games like Hades, which I'm going to be playing in about 5 minutes from now, as soon as I upload the audio for this recording. Yeah, we'll talk to you very soon, everybody, with our thoughts on Crystallis and a new crossover coming your way. Have a good night, and talk to you then. Goodbye.
Bye.